Don't forget to like, follow, subscribe, and turn on notifications so that you will receive alerts when there are new episodes. Go get it.
That's what I tell them. I've been grinding for so long, I wake up and chase my goals. I go out and I go get it, hot or cold, that's all I know. I don't succeed, then I don't breathe. Success, what does it mean? If I conquer all my goals, then I'm living out my dream. Dig deep, go out and get it. Success Chronicles. Compete until it's finished. Success Chronicles. Go take care of your business. Success Chronicles. It's deeper than just winning. Success
Chronicles. Hey, what's up, everybody? This is Chip Baker coming to you with another episode of the Success Chronicles, and I am truly excited about this one. And before we get started, hey, I'm gonna go ahead and warn them, man. It's about to get hot.
Okay, man, do your thing, man. Hey, now the pressure on me, if I start sweating, it's because he put the pressure on me, people.
No, man, it's gonna be great. But first, I'm excited to have Mr. Tiki Davis with us. A great guy doing some great things. Man, an amazing journey that he's had to live and learn a lot, and he's doing lots to make a positive impact on our world. And so first, I just want to say thanks so much for taking the time to interview with the Success Chronicles.
Man, I appreciate the opportunity, man. Anytime I have an opportunity to share on a podcast or a stage, it's truly a blessing, man, because people don't have to let you on their platform. So any opportunity I get that's as aligned on what I'm trying to do, I jump at the opportunity.
There you go. There you go. Well, let's dive into it, man. If you don't mind sharing a little bit about, you know, your background and who, so the audience will have an idea of who you are and what it is you do.
Okay. My name is Tiki Davis. I'm from West Texas, Odessa, Texas. So if you don't know where Odessa is, it's probably in between El Paso and Dallas. We're right in the middle. So that's kind of where Odessa is. And you're probably familiar with the book Friday Night Lights. So I'm from that city where that book is made famous. And so that's kind of where I'm from. You know me, Tiki Davis. It's one of those guys. I like to say my story is an evolution story. What do I mean by that? It's growth, 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 growth with the evolution. You know, a lot of small wins, a lot of big defeats, a lot of small wins, a lot of big defeats. So that's kind of where I would like to start. If we're ready to jump into the story.
Yes, sir. Mm-hmm. Well, let's dive into it. Share a little bit about that story so they have an idea of, they need okay. to hear that journey, man.
Okay, so, you know, my story started, you know, I was born in 1978 to a mother and a father that never went past the sixth grade, either one of them. My mother gives me away at birth to my father. But before that happens, my mother and my father was together, but my dad got shipped to prison. So my mother became a prostitute. But how my mom becomes a prostitute, because she was having sex early on, her dad found out. Sorry about that. Her dad finds out that she's having Sure, I turn this off, man. But anyway, her dad finds out that she's having sex, right? And so her father, my grandfather, goes to my mother and says, if you're going to have sex, you might as well get paid for it. So my grandfather turned my mom into a prostitute. So now she's having sex, getting paid for it. Then she goes out and finds her a pimp because she needs guidance. It's a guy named Ramsey in Amarillo, Texas. So my mom's working at the hospital as an orderly by day, prostitute by night. So one of her main customers is the head physician at the hospital. So my mom gets pregnant, but she don't know who the father is because she's having unprotected sex with her pimp, and she's also having unprotected sex with this physician. She delivers her first son. He comes out white. So the doctor knows that's his kid, but he's a married man. So my mom has one request: tie my tubes so I don't have to have any more kids like this. And they fire her. So my dad is in prison. He's released from prison after serving 7 years. He goes to find out my mom's been a prostitute, so he's jealous. So he beats up the pimp so he can release her. Then he finds out she has a son. Then he finds out he's a white son. Now he's jealous. And he begs my mom to have him a son. And she says, Frank, I don't want to have any more kids. I'm not ready to settle down. I don't want to have any more kids out of wedlock. I want to have them later in life. And he was like, no, please have me a son. She says, my tubes are tied. I'm never going to have any more kids. He begs and he begs. And finally, she unties her tubes. 2 years later, she gets pregnant with me. And so I like to tell people I wasn't even supposed to be here. You hear people say cliche, but it's a destiny that God put you here by any means necessary. And then a few days I was a premature baby because mama was living a lifestyle. And so I'm born in Andrews, Texas. A few days after I'm home from the hospital, my mom calls my dad and says, come get him. You wanted a son. So my dad comes to get me. He's 25 years old. He ain't never raised a son. So he gets me, takes me to his grandmother, few months old, and she takes me in with open arms. He takes me to my grandmother, Hetty Ward in New Mexico, and says, babe, grandma, take care of my boy. And she takes me in with open arms because she's repaying a debt to who? My father, because she gave him away at birth. Yeah. So now that's how my life started. So the first 3 years of my life, I stayed with my grandmother. I'm staying with her, loving life. And that's why I'm a breakfast eater now. So anybody know you bring me in to speak, make sure we do breakfast maybe three times because I'm a breakfast eater because of my grandma, Hattie Ward. And so I used to eat breakfast and we used to walk in the little trail. So after about 4 years, my mom is back in Odessa now living this lifestyle of a prostitute. So now she has regular customers. And it's this guy, his name is Tommy Joe Turner. He's a big pimp, drug dealer guy. And my mom is like Queen Bee of his ladies. So he keeps her close to him. So one time it's a diamond club. It's in the flats of Odessa. It's kind of like where all the black people would go and party and have hangouts. So mom is sitting in the car, his Lincoln Town car, like in the 80s. And out of nowhere, boom, Tommy gets his head blew off. Bloods, brains, everything is on my mama. Called her a black widow. So mama gets scared. Now she want to fly straight after the murder of Tommy. So she starts getting welfare. So back in those days, you had to show your kids to get the benefits. So now mama comes to find this boy. She had already got my brother from my other grandma, her mother. And now she had to come find me in New Mexico. So she pulls up to New Mexico in a Lincoln Town car with this guy named Murphy Young, which was one of her customers that she wanted to fly straight with. He was an older man. Mom was in her 20s. This guy was in his 40s. And she comes and gets me and sits me in the back seat of this Lincoln Town car. And she says, meet your brother. First time I seen a white person.
Wow.
So that's how it started. Then I moved to Texas, Odessa, Texas, where I still live to this day. Went to projects, low income housing. Mom is still living that life. And then I start watching football, right? Watching Dallas Cowboys, the Chicago Bears. And this the era when they screwed Walter Payton and they gave Refrigerator Perry that carry to score. So I used to always, and I used to think I was so young, I used to think Refrigerator Perry was the star of the team until I seen this guy named Walter Payton. And I wanted to be that. And that ignited that first dream, wanting to be a football player. And at that age, only person that I could ask to help me with my dream was my mom. So I went to my mama and says, "Mama, for Christmas," because that's the only time you can really ask for something. Say, "Mama, for Christmas, can you give me a football? Because when I grow up, I want to be a football player," right? And she had that look in her eyes that she wasn't for certain she can give me that football. But when Christmas came, and that apartment complex, that Christmas tree that didn't have many decorations, many ornaments up under it, it was a football wrapped in newspaper. So my mom helped me get my first dream, was the identification, the symbolization of the dream was the football. And I would play with that football. Week later, mom would come to me and my brother. We out in the projects playing with the ball. Other kids are riding their bikes, but I'm locked into this ball. Mom usually was pretty good about not bringing her dates back to the house. But this particular time, she got sloppy. And she told me and my brother, you know, make sure you're in the house before it gets dark. And if you need anything, go to the neighbor's house. So I listened to what mom said. I played with the ball. Brother went next door. It gets dark, so I go home. But I leave the door unlocked for my brother and my mother to come home because I only got one key to the house. And today I got the key. So I leave the door unlocked. I go upstairs, get myself ready for bed, take my pants off, got my T-shirt on. Bunk beds used to be stacked on top of each other, but me and my brother broke the stick, so they were side by side. I get in my bed. I wrap up under my Star Wars blanket. I could see the silhouette, my shadow, and I could see the man walking because we didn't have curtains. We had a sheet with tacks on that, so I could see the guy walking. But I'm not afraid because I'm thinking it's my mama coming home or my brother's coming home, but it was a guy that I'd never seen before. And everybody asked me, "Tika, was you afraid?" Absolutely, I'm not afraid because I'm used to seeing people come and go in this place I call home, right? And the guy comes to sit on the edge of the bed like he's going to read me a bedtime story. And the man started asking me, "Hey, man, boy, where's your mama?" And I'm about to tell the man, "Go wait for mama in her room." But before I could answer the man's question, he says, "Your mama stole my money." And he grabbed me, wrapped the bandaid around my neck, and began to squeeze the dream out of me. And that's how I use it in speaking, squeezing the dream out of me. Because at this time, I'm 7, right? I don't know that my life is in danger, but this man is trying to murder me. He got this bandana, he's squeezing the life out of me. And all I want to do is to let me go so I can chase this dream of becoming a football player because the ball is in the bed with me. Then he lets me go and I begin to gasp for air and gasp for air and gasp for air. Then he grabbed me by the head and stabbed me in the neck with a screwdriver. And then the dream, then the life is bleeding out of me. So I don't know what to think. What else can this man do to me? And I remember, and a lot of times I don't share this part, but since we're doing the podcast, the details of it, we were living in the projects and it was upstairs. And mom used to always keep her hatchet like a baby axe in there. And even when he stabbed me in a screwdriver, I've always had a sense of environment, right? And even when he stabbed me, I'm thinking like, God, I'm glad he didn't find the hatchet.
Yeah.
You know? And so now he smothered me. He beat me and stabbed me in the neck. And I'm like, what else can he do to me, Chip? What else can he do to me? And then little did I know, boom, the first punch knocks me out. Boom, the second punch wakes me up. Now he's starting to beat the dream, the life, everything out of me. He's trying to finish me. So I decide to fight because I don't know what else to do. I'm squirming. He's squeezing me. He's choking me. He's beating me. So I roll down between the wall and the bed, and I'm up under the bed. And the guy's moving the bed left to right, left to right, left to right. And I remember the only thing that made me survive is that mama used to try to whoop us. And I would go run and get up under the bed, and she'd be moving the bed and trying to turn it over. So getting whoopings and being disciplined saved my life. And then the man started panicking, talking in machine gun Spanish, "La, la, la, mama, la, money," whatever. And so he finally decides to leave. And the only thing that I really remember of this guy is the bottom of his blue jeans and his snakeskin boots. And I heard that back door kind of slam, screen door. I roll from up under the bed. I pick up my ball. This is true. I pick up the ball and I go next door where my brother is playing Atari. But in the speak, I say Nintendo, but it was an Atari video game. And I fall into his arms It was an old man named HL there, used to work for the local newspaper. And I remember when I fell in my brother's arms, he didn't know how serious it was. He's like, oh man, just get a Band-Aid and stick it on it. He was drunk. And then everybody started going crazy in the house because, you know, it's like 10 or 12 people in the house, everybody in there. And the word made it back to my mama. She was hanging in the flats that her ways finally caught up to her and her son was murdered. They pronounced me dead already. So that's the first 7 years of my life, Chip.
Wow.
So, you know, this is one of them. So that's why I like to say it's an evolution story, because you have great triumph, great losses, great wins. And like a lot of times they were like, you know, we were poor. So after that moment, I survived that incident, right? So we get evicted from our projects. So now we start living with family members that live in the projects too. Or in little houses, one room, all the cousins are there. My mama was a hustler, so sometimes she would give the money. And me and my brother, the half white kid, his name is Kevin, sometimes me and him be the only two that didn't even get nothing to eat. Mm-hmm. Let me explain to you how poor it was, and we're staying at somebody else's house. We would go there, and at nighttime, all the kids, it'd be one couch, maybe a chair, maybe a love seat. So, like, say 4 or 5 o'clock, everybody playing outside, and all their parents are partying and stuff. So kids, they would start going in the house and sitting in on the couch in the spot, right? Or have their sister, the brother, whoever with them, they sitting in the spot because they starting to save the spot because they know they need somewhere to sleep on the couch. So most of the nights or whenever we would stay somewhere, I was sleeping on the floor. It was like wood floor, and they didn't have enough blankets to go around. I remember a few nights sleeping on the floor, and I was covering up with a rug. But you know, like the rug, and it got that stuff that like itch on your body.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
And then this is when water was free, right? So we didn't have no water hose, and usually the faucet like was broke. So if you didn't have no pliers or nothing, you can't go outside and drink no water. And it was like that in the kitchen. Right. So in the middle of the night, young kid, I'm probably about 8, 9 this time. I'm thirsty, but I'm afraid to go ask these people we stand with to give me a cup of water. So what I would do, I would go into the bathroom, Chip, and I ain't never shared this on no podcast. You got it first. This I want to tell people how indigent, how poor we really were. I would go into the bathroom. You remember the face towels? Mama said, get your face towel and hang it up. I would put a face towel, wasn't even mine. And this is when everybody, you had some zest, you was doing good. I would get somebody face towel that was damp and suck the water out of the face towel. And it would taste like zest soap. That's my background, man. That's how poor we were. And it was this lady named Peggy Madrid. So I had always been a hustler. So when you hear guys say, man, I was homeless, I ate out of trash cans. I never did that thing because my hustle ain't never been that weak. Even as an early age, I would go across the street. Chip, it was this lady named Peggy. And she would give me food. And she had one rule. If you bring your bowl or whatever, you can't keep my dishes. So I would go over there and she would give me Popeyes. She was giving me tortillas. You know, so I'm a little kid walking down the street with cutoff shorts, Superman t-shirt on, a no shirt or no shoes, walking down the street to get these tortillas, these beans, these Fruit Loops, anything, because that, yeah, I've been hustling that long. So now my first dream, as we'll go to the next part of, to be this football player, right? So in and out of boys' homes. Finally, this white family takes me in when I'm like 14. Got stuck on juvenile probation when I was 11. So that's how I got into the boys' home, Buckman's Group Home. So I was in the boys' home from 11 to maybe, well, no, I got in the boys' home when I was 12. But the reason I got into the boys' home at 12 is because I was taking care of myself. We had moved on the other side of town, the west side of Odessa, and people started figuring out I was living by myself most of the days. So out of 7 days a week, I was probably by myself 4 days. Mama's coming and going. So I would go to school and I have a big wad of money. So the word got out, say Tiki selling candy, right? And so the principal called me to the office and asked me, Tiki, are you selling candy? I said, yes, I am selling candy every day after school, because I had a big wad of like $20 bills and ones, right? And so they called me to the principal's office, and they also called my probation officer, Gary. God rest his soul. Gary passed away a couple years ago. I did his eulogy. So Gary comes in there and says, Tiki, man, what are you doing with all this money? I said, well, Gary, you know, I got to keep my money on, because if I leave it at home, my mama is going to clip me for it all. He said, clip you? What? He says, Tiki B, but why do you have this money on you? I said, man, I need it. He said, but where did you get so much money? I said, I earned it after school selling candy. He said, who's your pusher? I said, he's a guy named Eddie Vidal. He says, when did he come get you? I said, he picked me up in the front of school every day. He said, I said, he'll be here at 4:30. Most days I don't go to football practice because I got to sell candy. Because I said, Gary, I don't know if you know it or not, but I take care of myself. Mama not at home most of the nights. So I got to go sell this candy. So when the guy that we sold candy for pulls up to my junior high school in his van, the police and everybody ambush him. And they open up these boxes that he was give us to go sell the candy. And they said, Tiki, where's the drugs? I said, what are you talking about? What drugs? I told you I was selling candy. And that's what we would actually do, sell candy. Caramel nut clusters, jelly beans, peanut brittle. We would go door to door and sell these boxes of candy for $5. And every box that I sold, I would get a dollar bill. So I would sell 20 every day after school. So we would knock on the people's door. I remember the speech. He goes, hello, my name is Tiki. I'm a member of the West Texas Teens. West Texas Teens is a working program that keeps me busy and out of trouble. We also earn trips and activities. With your purchase, you can help us reach our goal. Let me show you some of our products. And that's how we would do that. And so we did that. Gary threw me in the boys' home because I was living alone. Then I started doing better academically. Started getting into different things because I had structure for the first time in my life. Then the boys' home closed. The director of the boys' home sees how well I'm doing. He doesn't want me to go back with mama because they don't want to lose me. He said, I never had a boy do as well as you. So he had a twin brother. He says, I got a twin brother with a room. It's yours if you want it. I said, sure, I'll take it. I'm 14, 15. I move in with an all-white family. So a lot of people say, is it like the Blind Side, Brown? No, my story's not like them guys. Similarity, but mine's way heavier. No disrespect to them guys and what they went through, but this is a different animal, right? So I stay with these people, and they don't have money. My stepdad was a used car salesman. My stepmother was a convenience store clerk, and they had three other kids living in the house. So they would try to give me money, lunch money, school clothes. I said, I can't accept anything because you're letting me here. So my stepdad would get frustrated. He says, what I do for my other kids, Tiki, I'll do for you. But as you understand, I ain't never accepted nothing from nobody because I've been taking care of myself my whole life. So this is the first time somebody really gave me a place to live that I can go back year after year and stay. So you've done enough. So now I'm excelling in football because it's the first time in my life I go to practice every day. Then in this town known for football and oil, I have an opportunity my senior year, going into my senior year, which is my junior year, to be running back number one for my local high school. But that dream was over as quick as it started because I was accused of a crime. And I had to spend my senior year locked up in jail. But a lot of times when I'm sharing this part of my story, I ask people, who's the first person to come see you if you went to jail at 17? And 90% of the time they say, my mama. And I tell them, you're absolutely right, because the person that came to see me when I was 17, my dream ripped away from me, was the lady that put the ball in my hand that told me the dream was possible, was my mama. But the twist to my story, Chip, she was locked up the same time I was, on her way to prison for murder. So the powers that be allowed me and my mama to have an in-house son-mother visit. And I walk into the visitation room and I said, mama, I didn't do what they said I did. I can get life. And she looked at me and said, me too, because she was looking at 99 years. And she said, son, I love you, and turned to walk away. Then I go back to my jail cell, and where they have me, I'm in there with all the first degree felonies, less like me. The guy you see on the news that might get the electric chair, he was my cellie. The guy that did this every day, and we would watch it every day. It was kind of like, you know, like jailhouse rules. You just watch. It was like watching Sports Center. Now everybody's watching the local news. Like, I mean, I'm going to court. I'm going to do this and see if they did it. They come back with 40, 50, 60 years. And I'm looking around. I'm like, is this going to be my destiny? Am I going to go to prison for 50 years? And I would try to tell these guys. And even then, I'm 17. I'm trying to motivate myself. Tell them, when I get out of here, I'm going to go to college. When I get out of here, I'm going to go to the NFL. And they would laugh at me. They said, nobody get out of here and go to the NFL. Nobody makes it, much less go to college to get accepted into college. So 6 months later, I get out. I start working at a local dealership, washing cars for $5.25 an hour, making about $200 a week. Only thing that I got to my name when I get out is a pair of pants, a T-shirt, and I had a girlfriend. She bought me a pair of Jordan tennis shoes. That's all I had. And I had my car. My stepdad kept it for me. It was a 1987 Chrysler LeBaron Sky Blue hatchback, right? So he said, Tiki, I give you somewhere to stay, boy, but that's all I can do. I said, that's all I need. And so I worked and I worked. Every time I got paid, I bought me a pair of pants or a shirt, bought me some socks and underwear, just started building myself back up. Working for that man for 2 years. And that's why I always tell people, when you work hard, people are paying attention to your work. You might not get the results, like we're talking about the evolution. So I'm washing cars for 2 years, Chip. My hands are breaking out with the dealership soap. It's strong. Breaking out in hives. You know, I can't do nothing. But this guy that I work for has some juice in the town. So if you're watching the movie Friday Night Lights, he was the guy at the dealership that was giving the free cars to the boosters. He was that guy. His name is Steve Lake, and he came to me, found out I was working for him, and I thought he was going to fire me, right? And, you know, he was watching me. So it was a Friday, and he called me on the intercom. He says, Tiki Davis, Steve Lake office. And I'm acting like I'm not here, and I've been there 2 years, but he's been coming to watch me. I'm like, Tiki Davis, Steve Lake office, and on the intercom over the whole dealership. I'm like, man, he ain't talking to me. So it was this guy named Kim Brown, right? And I don't know if you're on mute, Chip, but I can't hear you.
Yeah, man.
Okay. Yeah, okay, yeah. So I didn't know if you did that on purpose. Uh-huh. So anyway, he kept on asking me to come to the I was in Make Ready in the detail department. This old man named Ken Brown. And I used to always call him the Hunchback of Notre Dame because he was old. He was kind of hunched over. And so I used to always give him stuff, right? And he would give me stuff. So he comes out and he said, because he always said, you're going to get fired. So he comes out and he goes, Tiki, the boss wants you in the office with your walking papers. Today's your last day, boy. He old white man. So I said, man. And I felt like that. So I go walk upstairs to go into the office and he goes, Tiki. He goes, what are you doing this weekend? I said, well, Mr. Lake, first of all, I'm going to work for you till 12 o'clock. And I say, my best friend is playing running back in Abilene, Texas for McMurray, and I want to go watch him play. And but I'm going to work till 12 first because the game ain't till 6. And he goes, all right. And he reached in his pocket, and he gave me five $20 bills, $100. He said, make sure you get down there and get back safe. I'll see you Monday. And I said, no, Mr. Lake, what is it that you wanted? He goes, no, go have a good time with your buddy. Watch him play football. And I said, no, but what did you want? He says, well, since you're asking, I just want to see if you want to help me move some personal items because I'm moving into a new house. And some stuff you don't let movers move. And I just wanted to, you know, have you help me. Then I said, no, Mr. Lake, I don't want to help you. I'm going to go watch my buddy play. But I just really wanted to know because you're giving me this money and I just don't want to take money for nothing. But if I get back early, I may come help you, but I'm going to go watch the game. He said, no, that's why I gave you the money. You don't owe me anything. See you Monday at work. So I said, okay. So I go wash the cars till 12. And then after I get done, I leave Odessa around 2 o'clock. It's about 2.5 hour drive to Abilene. The game's at 6, it's homecoming. My boy is a star running back. And I admire him because that's what I want to do. I want to be a college running back. So I'm watching my boy DJ run this rock, right? He get a couple carries, they sack him, boom. He get another one. The line ain't black. And so you know when your boy's in the stand, you really want a ball, right? So he's not having the game that he wanted to have. And so he gets threw out of the game. So we came all the way down here. You ran the ball 3 times and you get ejected out the game, right? For kicking or doing something. And so now I'm kind of mad because I came all the way down here to watch you play and you threw out the game. And so I ain't really supposed to be hanging out late and partying and all that, but I was going to do that. And that was going to be a violation of my probation. But that sixth sense in my head, like I always had that discernment on life and opportunity. So I said, well, since he got threw out the game, I think I'm going to go back home to Odessa and see why this man gave me this $100. So I leave Saturday night after the game and I'm driving and I'm thinking about why did this man give me this $100? So I go home, I wake up around 7 o'clock in the morning, and I drive to his house. This year is 1997. And I go to this big mansion out in the country club. First time I've ever seen a house like that. And I see these Spanish guy putting in sprinkler systems, moving stuff, and I'm thinking, I'm driving up in that 87 Chrysler LeBaron, and I'm thinking, man, I don't want to do this, man. I don't want to do this yard work, but he paid me that $100. I owe him, right? So I get out my car, I go ring this doorbell at this mansion, and I remember the Dallas Cowboys was playing the San Francisco 49ers. I don't know what team Dion was on, but he was on one of them, right? That's that era, right? And he says, Tiki, I'm glad you're here, man. Come on in the house. He don't worry, you're not gonna be doing that out here. And this is when we finally got a Home Depot. He said, let's go to Home Depot and get these guys some more equipment. And he says, I really wanted to talk to you. And he said, I did some checking on what you got in trouble for. I think you got a raw deal. So what I want to do is make an offer to you. He says, any college you want to go to, you go to in the United States of America. If you get in, I'll foot the bill. If you want to go to the University of Texas, like my boy Chris, you can go there. If you want to go to UCLA, like my other son Blair, you can go there. Anywhere you get in, you can go. So, Texas and the Division I schools, I couldn't really go no more because now I've been sitting out, haven't played football in 4 years. University of Texas, where he was a booster, I could have got in, but I would have had to sit out. And then the next year, they're bringing in Cedric Benson. So you're not gonna play, right? So I pick a small university, Sul Ross State University, because I didn't have to sit out at that level. And so that next semester, I found myself playing football, scoring touchdowns again. Now this dream of being a pro is ignited again. That dream of buying mama this house is ignited again. So by this time, I played 2 years of college football. And a lot of times when I'm sharing this part of the story, I said I had to pick, I had to put down the football and pick up the books. But that's speaker talk. But the truth of the story was the football coach found out what I was on probation for. I started as a freshman, started as a sophomore. But halfway in that sophomore season, he played judge and jury and put me on the bench and bring a guy off of defense to take my job. And I couldn't accept that. So we do a long haul to Jackson, Mississippi. It's raining. We just got some new uniforms. And the guy, and I'm not trying to talk bad about Scott Kissy, but he wasn't good as I was at that time. Scott, you're a good coach. You're doing a great job. So Scott was the running back. He's a white guy. And we playing brothers in Jackson College, not Jackson State. It was Mississippi College. And them boys were so black, they was blue, right? And they bringing it. They we had New Jersey and they hitting Kissy. So when you're a running back and you the second string running back, you watching the guy, you watching his carries, right? So Kissy probably at first half had maybe 22 carries and 22 yards, right? And right before the last play of the game, they rip his jersey off and strip the ball and go 99 yards. We on the 1 yard line. So the coach, I know he don't want to play me. He's making sure this guy gets numbers so he don't have to play me, but they strip it. They go 99 yards the other way and rip his jersey off, new jersey. So he come out of the game. He says, all yours, Tiki. So I'm warming up. I know I'm going to start the second half. We come out. We warming up. The head coach says, Kissy, get in there. I go to the bench. We getting throttled. So after half, we down like 30-7. And then by this time, Kissy getting throb. We were probably like 48-10. I don't remember the score exactly, but we losing really, really bad. And it's about 2 minutes left in the game. He looked at me and said, Davis, get in there. And it's the only time and only time I quit anything in my life. I looked at the coach and looked at the scoreboard and I said, for what? And I didn't go into the game. Then it was the longest 12-hour trip. Did I quit on my team? Yes, I did. Did I quit on the situation? Yes, I did. But I knew in my heart, this guy judged me and I couldn't accept it. Because it wasn't my talent that didn't get me on the field. It was this guy making a judgment on my character, right? Mm-hmm. So we get back to the university. He asked me to come see him that Sunday morning. He says, Tiki, you might as well not play for this team anymore. Because never in my 30 years of coaching have I ever seen a player quit on me in the middle of a game. I said, well, coach, I said, I didn't quit on you. You quit on me before you ever got a chance to know me. So they fired him after that. After, you know, I didn't play no more. We had maybe two games left and a new coach came in. So now I can get rejuvenated. But the coach disliked me so much. He told the new coach about me, and that new coach came in and set me down, said, I heard about you. You're a me player. You only care about yourself. He says, so is there anything about you that I need to know? I says, no, what is it that you want to know? He says, there you go. You got two strikes already because you lied to me. He goes, one more strike, you're out. I said, okay. And I just left. So I didn't know if he wanted me to tell him I was on probation or what, but I'm in the university. The president knows, everybody knows. So this is not a secret. So I'm not hiding anything from you. So he let me back on the team my junior year. And he says, if you be a team player, by the time the fifth game, I'll let you play. So the first 2 years, my freshman year, I start every 10 games, all conference player. Second year, I play a few games. Then he put me on the bench. Junior year, he treats me like a freshman. Do not put me on the travel squad. Give me jersey number 97. When I played, I wore 19, and I had to share a helmet with the kicker. And I'm scoring 5 touchdowns every day in practice because I'm scout team running back. And the team is losing every game. So finally, I play one game because the guy gets hurt. I break, I score game one and touchdown. The next day, we're in the newspaper. And because it's local, Odessa still kind of gets some of that newspaper. It says, former Odessa High running back Tiki Davis leads Sewell Ross in victory. So the coach is angry now because I'm getting some pub. And he brings the newspaper to me. He says, only time they write about us is when you play and do well. And I tell him, MF, you should play me more. And I shouldn't have said that. It was out of line. And so he put me back in the bench. That was like week 3. He says, if you do what you're supposed to do week 5, I'll let you play again. So I'm assuming that's running back, but I'm back to the bench after I win the 2-3 games. I'm on the bench with jersey number 97, right? And then week 5 come, or week 6, whenever he told me. And I says, and the running back that was there, he knew that it was my job. And he hands me the ball, and the coach says, why are you handing Davis the ball? I didn't tell him he was playing running back. I told him he was going to play, and he put me off on kickoff return. And I ain't never played a special team in my life. I ain't never made a tackle in my life. And that's how my football career ended. Some guy hit me. I helicoptered. I was like, man, I'm done. And so now I realize I'm going to quit college. What else can I do? because I came here not to get an education, but I came here to get to the NFL. So I was getting ready to quit college, but a staff member came to me and says, Tiki, he was my friend. He used to take pictures and write stories. I said, I've done everything I needed to do here. And he looked at me and says, Tiki, you don't have a degree. I said, no, sir. He said, you ain't done everything you need to do here. So I decided to put down the football and pick up the books because I realized I just didn't want to be a player on the field of athletics. I want to be a player in life. And that would serve me right, one of the best decisions I ever made. And so we'll fast forward it. So now my mom's in prison for murder. I get a call, ring, ring. It's my mom. And I say, hello. And she calls me my brother because my voice had matured so much. She says, Kevin. I said, no, mom, it's me, Tiki. She says, baby, you sound so good. Because understand, me and her haven't talked since I was 17. I'm 24 now. But I says, mom, I got some good news and I got some bad news. She says, well, give me the bad news. I said, well, mom, I'm not going to be able to buy you that house. I'm not going to be able to do those things I told you I was going to do because I'm not going to go to the NFL. I don't play football no more. She says, well, baby, that ain't too bad. She says, so what's the good news? I said, well, mama, I'm going to graduate in May with my bachelor's degree. I'm going to be the first person from the neighborhood. And she could hear me smiling through the phone. And she was smiling. And she says, baby, I got some good news, too. I said, what, mama? She says, I'm going to be there. I just made parole. So now I'm excited because my mama accepted my new dream. I have a new why. And my new why is to be a first generation college student. So now this evolution thing is still happening. So mama said, hold on, before you get off the phone, boy, I got two rules for you. And even though mama's been absent, but mama was still mama, right? Mm-hmm. And so I said, yes, ma'am. She says, I need you to send me $40. The first $20 is I'm working in the kitchen and I need to buy me some tennis shoes because the ones I got, I can't bend over and tie my shoes. So I need the ones with the Velcro straps. I said, yes, ma'am. And she said, the next $20 I need is to get a copy of my medical report because I'm sick and I need to get some help when I'm out. And she said, lastly, son, before I let you go, pick me up in San Angelo, Texas at the bus station and bring me a windsuit and expect the call from the warden of the prison because she's going to need an address for the property and make sure everything's on schedule with my release. I said, yes, ma'am. So I'm at home, midwinter break, that last semester that I got before I graduated in that May. December the 31st, 2001, I received the call from the warden of the prison, like my mother said. And she calls me, the warden. Tiki Davis, I said, yes, ma'am. She said, this is warden such and such. I said, yes, I've been expecting your call. My mom said you'll be calling. She says, I just want to let you know that Karen has expired. I said, yes, ma'am. My mom told me that her time has expired. She's getting out in 6 days. She says, son, you don't understand. What do you want to do about burial arrangements? So on the day that my mother was supposed to be released from prison, I was in Huntsville, Texas, having a funeral on that same day of January 6, 2002. That's how I found out my mama died. So the evolution of never really having a footing. And she was 44 years old when she died. So a lot of years, I'm 44 years old right now. I get anxiety about that year because I didn't know if I could make it because this woman to me was bulletproof. And this whole time I would see my daddy off and on, but we haven't spent more than a day together since he dropped me off with my grandmother 24 years earlier. Right? So now I bury mama. I want to give up. I don't know what to do, but it's work to be done. So I go back and I graduate with my bachelor's degree. And I still can't get no job because I'm still on probation for this crime. I go in front of the judge. I say, Judge, you told me if I did good, you would let me off probation and let me live my life. And the judge says, no. So the system forced me to go back to college and work on my master's degree because I can't go get no job. And I'm thinking about selling drugs, going back to the hood. some of my cousins is the big drug dealers and stuff like that. And I remember it was the Super Bowl was in Houston at this time. I think that first Super Bowl in Houston, I think it was the Patriots and somebody else. And I was going to that Super Bowl. A couple of our friends, because we're like, man, Super Bowl, you never come to Texas. Let's go down there. And I didn't have any money. I was like a freeloader. And I asked my cousin if he could loan me some money, if I can go to the Super Bowl and have a good time. And he was a big time drug dealer. He was sitting in his Suburban. And this is when boys like the TV screens and he had some in there. He goes, man, you go down there and see the Super Bowl. I'm going to be watching it in my truck. And you should stay here and go to work for me. And don't worry about going to see no Super Bowl. And I said, no, man. And so I don't even go to the Super Bowl. I go back to college and I'm having this talk with God. Man, God, if you don't show me a better way, I may have to take my cousin up on this offer. And I'm just praying to him. So about 6 months later, the Houston Chronicles in the local barbershop in Odessa, I'm there for the weekend and they're looking for Booby Miles. And I tell this guy in the most humbling way, why are you looking for Booby? I was better, or I was just as good as Booby. And the guy laughed at me. He says, nobody was good as Booby Miles. And he just don't know because he's not from Odessa. It was a few guys better than Booby. Was I one of them? Probably not, because I didn't never get to showcase my talent because I was in jail. He says, but if you're good as you say you are, they're looking for ex-football players at the stadium. And if you're good enough, they might hire you. So I went out there. I tried out. And they hired me as an extra to do some stunt work. And then after a few weeks, I worked myself up as a stand-in. So I was doing the stand-in for the Booby Miles character. And so I was looking around. I was like, man, I can do this. And a lot of people on set didn't know my undergrad degree. My first one was I got a bachelor's in communications. And my minor was in theater. So my theater teachers always tell me, Tiki, if you ever get an audition, it's like a first impression and you never get a second shot at it, right? So I hustled and I hustled and I hustled, working on the movie for about a month, doing background work. Then I'm out of money because I'm getting $100 a day and I'm going to night school. But the money that I'm making on the movie is not really helping me because it's just enough to get me gas and food. So this particular time, they're doing a Dallas Carter scene. Peter Berg, the director, telling all the black bodies to go get dressed. So I go up to this Hollywood director, Peter Berg, and I pull him and I say, Peter, man, I got to get something in this movie, man. I don't got any money. I've been working for you. Now you're going to ask me to put on another uniform for another team. And he goes, you think you're going to be seen in the other part? He says, if you want to be in this movie, this is your best chance. So just go get dressed and I'm going to give you something. So I'm one of those guys. If you tell me something, please deliver, because I'm the same way. So I go get dressed. We're in the locker room scene of this big movie, Friday Night Lights, of this number one best-selling book of all time. And Peter Berg goes in there, and it's a room full of 100 Division I players and this D3 player, Tiki Davis. And he says, who's the craziest guy in here can get a football team hype? I'm like, that's my cue. So I run to the front. Peter, you told me outside I can do it. You told me. He says, I didn't tell you shit. Punk me out in front of everybody. I'm hurt. I'm crying inside. I go to the back of the room. All these D1 dogs, Brett Robbins, all these guys, University of Texas A&M, I'm sitting in the back with my head down. Another guy runs up there, and I'm thinking he's taking my dream. He's taking my shot. He screams, ah! Peter Berg says, that's about 30% what I'm looking for. Another guy goes, he's cussing. Peter Berg punk him out. Man, I'm trying to make a PG-13 movie. I can't do it, all this profanity. So by this time, I'm boiling, right? So I run back to the front and I said, let's go, baby. Let's go. Don't be afraid to get your name in the paper. Everybody organically got hyped like we used to go out and win a state championship for reals. And Peter Berg says, cut, cut, cut. He said, you're signed to the movie. So that's how I end up winning a speaking role in the movie Friday Night Lights. So I went from $100 a day to $7,500 a week because I was a principal in the role. And I made such an impression to meet my second Earth Angel. My first Earth Angel was the guy that sent me to college. My second Earth Angel was Peter Berg, the director of Friday Night Lights, because that movie changed my life. So now I'm a principal actor in this movie. I go to Houston. Some of the guys that were on doing the stunts, they were at home, so they wasn't there to know that I got upgraded. So I'm in craft services. Now I get to eat where the principal actors eat. I used to sneak to eat over there when I was an extra, and some guy would try to bully me. Man, you ain't supposed to be over there extra, and treating me really bad, right? But I didn't say no fuss because I didn't really want to get fired, and I knew I wasn't supposed to be over there anyway. So I'm standing in line. This guy didn't know. Like I said, people are watching you, right? So this guy, he ends up playing Coach Freddie James in the Friday Night Lights movie, The Carter Coach. And this guy that was bullying me, at least he thought I was in the right line this time, and I'm waiting to get my food. And he comes up. Didn't I tell you extra not to eat in this line? And I told him, I said, "Well, look here, brother. I'm supposed to eat over here." And the guy was like, "No, you're not. You're an extra." I said, "Man, I'm supposed to eat over here." And before it got violent, this guy named Julius Tenon turned around and says, "Man," tells that guy, "if you want to stay on this movie, I would leave this guy alone." He says, "What he's saying is true." He says, "100% true. He's your captain. Meet Tiki Davis." And then he rolls around, he shakes my hand. "I'm Julius Tendons. I'm your surrogate father." He says, "Man, I was in that room when you did that. Don't be afraid to get your name in the paper, boy." He said, "They written you into this entire movie." I said, "Really?" He says, "Yeah." He says, "Man, just stick close to me and I'll teach you the ropes." So at that time, me and Julius has been buddy buddy. So we in hair and makeup. And I know we're running low on time, so I'm gonna speed it up. So we're in there in hair and makeup. And I'm in there with Derek Luke, the actor, the guy that plays Boobie Miles. And I'm saying, "This is my opportunity to get in more movies." So I said, "I'm gonna ask Derek how to get in Biker Boys, how to get in more movies." And so Derek said, "Calm down, young brother. You know, it'll come to you, man. Be patient." And I'm thinking he's hating on me. But Julius, being older, he didn't want it to get out of line. He says, "Julie," he says, "Derek, my wife told me to tell you hello. She loves you." He like, "Who's your wife?" "She played your mother in Antoine Fisher. Viola. Viola Davis." He goes, "Oh, man, I love Viola." And at that time, we're talking the years 2003, 2004. And the only thing Viola had done at that time that anybody that really knew was Antoine Fisher. So that was my start of my relationship with Mrs. Davis and Julius. And he is like my dad, like to this day. And so fast forward, I do the movie. I end up making money, about 50 some thousand dollars over the life of the movie. So this evolution that I've been living. So I'm a movie star now, right? I go back to college. I'm finishing the degree. So now the movie's getting ready to come out. That football coach that judged me started to hear about it. But at graduation, he did half apologize with my first degree because he had heard that I was in that movie. But the reason he needed some recognition, because he said, "Tiki, out of that first 4 years, I was the only black student athlete that graduated in 4 years from stepping foot on campus." And he was like, "Man, I was wrong about you." But he was seeing my character, my day-to-day, the way I go to work. So now when they starting to bring posters and we're having interviews about this movie Friday Night Lights, he wants to be on the A side of it. And so he said, "Them guys from Hollywood, before they gave you that role in that movie, they called and asked about your character, and I told them you was a good old boy." And I knew that was a lie because they didn't even know I was in college. They didn't even know anything. Nobody had gave me an interview. Nobody know. I just went out and earned the spot, right? So people treat you different when they think they can gain some recognition for you. But still, I didn't care nothing about the movie, none of that stuff. I was happy to get that. But the thing that meant something to me was my name. My name. And so
Yes,
that's what it
sir.
was. So I went back in front of that judge, been in the movie, just graduated with my master's degree, Barry Mama, 2 degrees in a movie to my name. Been on probation for about 7.5 years, just getting ready to turn 25. I go in front of that judge and I say, "Judge, I got these degrees. I've done everything. Can you let me off probation? He says, no. So I had to do 10 years on probation. If I mess up one time, Chip, I go to prison for life. I was on probation, adult probation, from 17 to 27. Finally, I complete the probation when I'm 27. They tell me the probation I've had, everything goes away like it never happened. Turn 27, then the registry comes about in the year 2000. So not only am I on probation, I'm on this registry for 10 years at this time, just about. And then my lawyer and the judge told me, if you stay out of trouble while you're on probation, you got to register. But when you complete the probation, you don't have to. So when I completed the probation, I go to the police station. I say, man, I don't have to see y'all no more. I'm done with this. It's over. My record is clean. And then a lady tells me, like, no, Tiki, you got to see us for 10 more years. Mm-hmm. So I call my lawyer that I had at the time. And I told him, I said, man, what's going on? They said, I got to stay here and register for 10 more years. He goes, well, you're screwed. The laws change. Come see me in 10 years if I'm alive and I might can get you off. So now my back's against the wall. I don't know what to do. So I go back to the city known for football and oil. So I try to apply for a job. And at this time, I got a girlfriend and I put my whole life on hold. I never got married. I never had no kids. But now I'm dating this woman and she's pregnant. So now I'm fit to be a father. And I got this blemish on my record that I can't shake. So I said, man, I got to go get a job because football's over. Mama's dead. So I go to this oil company and I ask them to give me a job. And they, you know, after I get turned down by 40 or 50 other places, finally this job gives me an opportunity as a field engineer. But I'm not a degreed engineer, but they hire me. And they says, Tiki, we'll give you a shot, but it doesn't pay much until we train you. And I said, I'll take anything. But we're going to send you to engineering school. And if you're good enough, in 90 days, we'll give you a salary, a company truck, and a cell phone. But in the meantime, we're going to start you at $13 an hour. So my first job in the oil and gas business was $13 an hour with a master's degree from college. I took what I could until I could get something different. 90 days, they sent me to school. I became one of the best engineers in the area. Worked at that job for 3 years, got laid off. Couldn't find a job no more. So I started up a mobile car wash business. And I got a young daughter and a wife now. Back up against the wall, got a mortgage, got grown man bills. I can't let them suffer. So I started up a mobile car wash business, but now I'm worried about what the community's saying. Oh, he was an engineer, but you know, he did this and that, so that's why you're a car washer again. So I'm caught up in the perception of what other people think, right? Mm-hmm. So I want to get back in this oil and gas business. So this company, I finally gives me a shot because they look at my resume. I pass the drug test. They give me the job as the district engineer, the number one engineer, right? And so at this time, I get the offer letter, $115,000. I'm proud. I'm 28 years old. I take the offer letter. I go home. I said, baby, I got a job again. I put it on the refrigerator. Insurance for my daughter. I'm supposed to go to work on Monday, Chip. They call me in on a Sunday and take the job away from me because of my presence on the registry. And I always tell people when I'm speaking, it was like Denzel Washington in the Hurricane movie when he was this tough guy. And he act like he didn't need no help from nobody. And I was like, man, I can't do the time. And I damn near broke. And I go home and I tell my wife, man, they took the job from me because it's registry. And I was defeated. Wanted to cry. I didn't know what to do. And then I had asked her to do a favor for me because her doctor knew this lawyer that knew the judge. I said, man, can you talk to your boss and ask him to talk to the judge and maybe we can get this taken off of me because, you know, they changed the rules on me. So finally she asked her doctor friend to talk to the judge and the judge, The Lord God said, I tell your husband, if I'm him, I go work for myself. Nothing. But ain't nothing we can do. He's screwed. And I said, all right. And I took it. So within 6 years, I kept on grinding. I took what they said and it fueled me. It fueled me. And finally, the number one independent oil man in the world, Clayton Williams Jr., one of his engineers, a guy by the name Armando Madrid, brought me in to be his quality control engineer. And I worked for him for 8 years. And I took that $13 an hour to $1 million a year. My peak year, I made $1 million in 1 year. And I became the number one engineer in the world doing what I did. For the number one wildcatter in the world, a young black boy from the ghetto that couldn't read at 17, signing a statement for something that he didn't do. Mother, daddy that never passed the fourth and the fifth grade to be the top engineer in the world. So whenever I was on John Gordon podcast, he said, you one of one. I told him that at the beginning of the thing. He was like, oh, well, let me see. And when we got off that podcast, he says, you one line, you one of one. And so my mission was I had millions in the banks. So what I did, once I started making my money, I didn't want to be one dimensional. I had the education. I had all this glamour, started winning the Man of the Year awards, and everybody's starting to embrace me now because of the money and what I was doing. But none of that mattered to me, Chip. It was that thing where God told Abraham, I'll make your name great. Mm-hmm. That's what I wanted. I wanted some of that. Yeah, I want some of that name great, right? So no matter what money, and that's I was still broken. When people talk about the mindset, that was my fight for my life was that mindset. Because I ain't never been free my whole life. I might had a smile on my face. I might had money in the bank. I might have looked a certain way. I looked polished, but I was still locked up. It was a mental paralysis. I was locked up here. And even though I wasn't in that yellow suit no more, with handcuffs standing in front of that judge no more, I was locked up between the ears. And this thing between my chest was broken. Because I'm a father. And so how I got into this world of speaking, it was two reasons why I got into speaking. I wanted to tell my side of the story if they never cleaned me. Second was, every time I was at funerals, I didn't think the preacher did justice on the dead. So I started speaking in the funerals. That's when I first started speaking. I would get up at every funeral that a friend or somebody I knew, I didn't feel like they gave him justice, I would get up and tell the right story. That's how I started speaking, and I wanted to clear my name. So in the process of clearing my name, I'm sitting in this office right here 6 years ago. And I started studying motivational speakers. And I'm listening to this audiobook. This is when TDJ came out with Destiny. It's taking me 2 years to listen to it. I'm listening to it every day. And I'm listening to the disc over and over again. I can't move the next disc. Year's 2016, to be exact. So I Google motivational speakers. And the names popped up: Eric Thomas, T.D. Jakes, and Les Brown. I didn't know any of those guys at the time, right? So I said, I need to know all of them. So I go to the Potter House the next weekend, hear T.D. Jakes preach for the first time. And he's preaching on circumcision, the cut away. And he says, I don't know who I'm talking to. I don't know if I'm talking to somebody 38. Cut it away. If I'm talking to you, just don't stand there. Get up. And he says, if God does something in your life that you can explain, I need you to get up. And this is my first time being with Bishop. I don't even know. It feels like he's talking to me. I'm like, man, this man ain't going to tell me to stand up. I'm not going to tell him, get up. So I get up and I'm thinking, me and him looking eye to eye.
Yeah.
Right? And so I leave. And one of my childhood friends is associate pastor there. So I text him. I said, man, can you give me the audio recording of that? Because I want to watch it again. And I said, better yet, I want to meet T.D. Jakes. Can you hook that up? He go, well, man, I don't know. I said, all right, man. All right, cool. So this is when he had the TV show. So I sent an email the next week to him. I said, man, I got a story. Can you put me on the show? Somebody responded back in like an hour saying, yeah, give us, we were interested. Tell us more about your story. I got scared. I called my buddy. I said, man, they want me on the show. He goes, oh, really? And he said, man, send me what you sent me. And he's like, oh, man, your story is good. So he hooked me up with TD Jake's right-hand man, a guy named Derek Williams. And I was like, man, I just want to speak and share my story in the book. He goes, nah, what you mean book? We already got a movie. So that's how I ended up hooking up with the TDJ client, because they wanted a movie. But prior to that, I had just left LA with Viola and Julius, and I was telling them I want to write my book and go on this escapade as a speaker. And Julius told me, said, Tiki, if you ever write your book, we want to option it and make it a movie ourselves. So I told him, I told TD Jakes and Derek, I says, man, I can't do a movie with you guys because I got to do it with my team. They're like, who's your team? I said, it's Viola and Julius. He says, oh, man, Bishop been always wanting to work with them. So I hooked them two up and they start collaborating. We could never get to the finish line because for whatever reasons, but that's how I met them. And so after that, that was just part of the journey, the evolution, because I still got some work to do, because if I'm ever going to be an eagle, I need to see eagles in action. So that first eagle was Bishop Jakes. The second eagle, I go out to Florida. I sign up for a Les Brown conference. I pay to get the VIP, the access. And that same email I sent to Bishop Jakes, I printed out and I handed it to Les Brown. I said, man, I need to learn how to speak. Can you mentor me? Can you teach me? And so I get back home to Odessa. Les Brown calls me from Costa Rica. He says, yes, I can teach you. You have a remarkable story. I can train you. That's what I'm doing, teaching people to do what I do. So at this time, I'm thinking this coaching and this training is free. I didn't know somebody charged for this. So anyway, we came up with an agreement. I hired him as my coach. So I traveled the world with Les Brown, and that was my first introduction into the world of speaking. So they said, when you make money, so I started investing myself. So when I say that last I in the Tiki Factor, invest in yourself, that's what I did. I went to go see eagles in action, right? So when I was there, I started asking Les Brown, because I'm carrying his bag. We're in Charlotte, North Carolina. We're in Cleveland, Ohio. We're in Miami. We're in these different places. I got the suit on. I'm looking the part, but Les is not letting me get nothing on stage, right? He's training me. And I was like, man, let me speak. Let me speak. Let me do it. He goes, you're not ready. You're not ready. And I thought he was hating me, but I'm paying you all this money. I'm ready. I'm Tiki. You don't know me. He says, you're not ready. So finally, me being persistent and challenging him, because no one ever, he could tell you this day, no one challenged him like I did, you know? And I felt like I was paying this money, and I, you know, the things that I asked for, I was feeling like he wasn't delivering, but the best lesson that I was getting was the stuff that was away from the stage, the stories about him traveling with Michael Jackson, the stuff about his mother riding in the car. He says, I'm great because I share a birthday with Jim Brown and Michael Jordan. I gotta be great. So Les, all that stuff behind the scenes. Like one time we were with another guy named Henry Kellum. He was another platinum student like me. We're in Charlotte, North Carolina. We're doing a radio interview. And me and him is in the car, and all they want to take pictures and shake hands with Les. We already in the SUV. And Les comes to the car and he says, y'all get out of the car. I said, why, Mr. Brown? They don't want to see us. He says, you're trying to be me right one day. I said, yes, sir. He says, that lady in the interview says she's been doing this for 29 years, right? He says, I said, yes, sir. She says, who else does she know? People that's been doing this for 29 years. When you come back as the Tiki Factor, she needs to know your name. You need to know who you are. So she made us get out the car, go introduce ourselves and hand our car, because relationship capital is you're going to need these people. And even if you don't come back here, you can call her and say, hey, I'm in Seattle. I'm in L.A. Do you know anybody here that I can get on the radio station? Let them know I'm in town. So those are the lessons. And that's the best value I got for my money. Then shortly after, Les Brown fired me. And that was the best thing that ever happened to me in my speaking career. Because he said, I hope I see you at the top if you make it. He challenged me. He challenged me, and I had to prove to him one day I'm going to be just as good. It was kind of like that mentality when Kobe came to the NBA. He was telling everybody he was going to be better than Michael Jordan shooting them air balls. That was my Kobe shooting air bear moment, right?
Yeah.
See what I'm saying? So now Les fires me. Now I got a chip on my shoulder. Now I got to prove something to him. And then all the other students that was in there, I'm watching them and I'm killing them in the game, right? But I only got one more ego to me, right? So this guy had booked me to speak at Hard Rock Stadium in Miami, Florida, right? And we were speaking to the Dolphins sales staff, not the team, the sales staff, the people. And I do really well there. And this is like my really like first year really in the speaking business. I looked well and whatever, but I remember asking Les Brown, I want to meet this guy, this number one in the world guy, right? This ET, right? So this guy named Eric Schroeder, he says, Tiki, out of organically, I'm putting in the work. He says, man, I need somebody to open up for Eric Thomas tonight. I'm like, the ET guy? He's like, yeah. I said, all right, cool. This is in 2019. And I ain't never met E, right? So we go over here to Miami. It's this guy bringing him in, you know, and I'm looking around for Eric. He ain't nowhere to be found, right? So I go in there. I go on right before him. I kill it. I got everybody in there crying. So E, he pull up, the guy that brings me in, owns a big-time dealership in Miami and New York. He goes, man, Tiki Factor killed it, man. He tells stories. So E looking around like, who is this guy? So I go up to him. I introduce myself, say, hey, Eric, it's me, Tiki, man. How you doing, man? He goes, how do I know that name? How do I know that? I said, man, I reached out to you, said what's up on social media. You never replied. He goes, oh, man, that night's a sweet, man. Then he looked at me, says, he knew I had that gift. He went a minute. He said, I'll be seeing you. I'll be seeing you. And that was our first meeting. And then I handed him one of my little books that I had, a compilation book that I put. He said, I'm going to be real with you, homie. I don't read books, but I know you got some, so I'll be seeing you. And I just dapped him up. I said, right now, you're the best in the world. But I said, I'll be seeing you. And that was our first introduction to the third eagle in the business. And they've been respect ever since. And, you know, I see him from time to time, say what's up. Last time I seen him, I went to his ET conference that he had in Miami, Florida, right? No, it was in Atlanta. And he had a powerhouse. And the only reason I went, because I've seen ET, but I needed to see this guy with this paralyzed arm named Ink, right?
Yeah,
Ink. And what I went there for, was to see I was grading myself with the best in the world. I had to grade myself. I had to be real when I'm watching these guys on stage. Could I compete? This is in 2021. And I seen Ink. He had just started following me a few weeks ago on Instagram. So I walk up to him and said, Ink, I told you I was going to be here. I said, hey, meet Tiki Factor, and the most humble speaker I ever met to this day, him and Nick Voiches. He looked at me dead in the eyes and he says, boy, the pleasure's all mine. I said, man. So he said, let me go do what I do. We're rapping a little bit. Ink went on that stage. He lit it on fire. And that day I made the assumption. I said, E.T. ain't the best in the world. It's this guy named Inky.
Yeah.
You know, it's this guy named Inky, right? And so, but when I left there, I was rejuvenated because I knew I could compete with the best in the world. And check this out, full circle, while I close this joint. This part of the story. The other person that shared that stage with him that night was a guy named Jesse Isler, right? You know Jesse?
Mm-hmm.
And he killed it. So one of my friends named Sean Prez, he used to be the VP for Bad Boy. He's like, Tiki, because we was on this journey together. He's like, who was the best? I said, Inky was the best. I say, second was this guy named Jesse to me, because he says when your family member needs you or something, you just got to show up, right? And he's seen the best in the world, right? So he said, how do you feel, dog? I said, I feel like I can compete. I feel like if I share the stage with them guys, they'd be talking about me too. Like if I was an audience member, my story could have impact too. He like, that's good. But now the organic, like the earth angel, people are watching, right? So I do the John Gordon conference where you see my story, right? That's why we're on this call, right? John Gordon. God bless John Gordon.
Yes, sir.
After I do the summit, right? I go to my inbox on Instagram. I got a private message from Jesley Isler. And he says, Tiki, wow, thank you for sharing your story on the John Gordon Positive Summit. I tuned in and your story was so powerful. Thank you. And powerfully told. He says, I got your information. We'll be in touch. And I just told him, thank you, brother. Appreciate you. And that was another confirmation that I knew I can compete with the best in the world. And that's how I became the Tiki Factor.
Man, so powerful. Just, it's lots in there that just kind of blew me away, man. Just, I think it's a blessing to be able to take all of those things and learn from that. And use those mm-hmm. lessons to help others, man. So just processing yeah. all of that, man, I consider that to be hugely successful. So let's touch on success. What is right. your definition of success?
Well, my definition of success now, if God say the same, I'll be 45 my next birthday. So my definition of success is when I die, nobody has to lie about me. Who I was, how I lived, and how I went about my business. Good, bad, or different, I want to live a life a certain way that you don't have to lie about me. If I did business, that he was a shrewd businessman. You know, see, he was a great father. He might not have been the best husband, but whatever it is, I don't want you to have to lie about me. That's success to me. It's not about the money I made, not the stages that I spoke on, but when it's all said and done, that thing called legacy, that legacy stands for something. You don't have to lie. Just tell the truth on who the man he was, the good, the bad, and the ugly. Be real. That's success to me.
I love it, man. Well, as we close, I'd love for you to get the opportunity to share with the audience where they can go follow you mm-hmm. And check out mm-hmm. The Tiki Factor, all the things that you have going right. on, man. Let them know your social media and all of that stuff.
Okay, well, so finally, this full circle moment, we finally got a major book deal. So my memoir is going to be coming out fall 24. So all you please go out and pick that up. The working title now is I Had to Lose to Win. It's going to be with HarperCollins. And guess who's my partner is? Viola Davis. She's also my partner on the book. It's going to be the first book up under her imprint 20 years later. So she don't want to work with me unless I put the work in. And she puts her name on something. Is certified. And so my brand is the Tiki Factor. My name is spelled T-I-K-I, right? So I branded myself with my name, the Tiki Factor. But when I end my talks, when I share that story, no one cares how strong or powerful your story is because they want it to translate to their own life, right? So the T stands for total commitment. I challenge people to make a total commitment to your life. The next thing is imagination. Live from your imagination and not your history, because none of us are our history. And the next thing is K, kindred spirits. The people around you affect you. The only reason I'm on this call today with Mr. Chip is because we're kindred spirits and John Gordon and different people like that in his network. So the people around you affect you. And the last I is invest in yourself. Invest in yourself. I invested in my education because it started with washing cars. Then when I wanted to give up on football, I stayed invested in my education because I just didn't want to be a player on the field of athletics. I want to be a player in life. The only reason I'm on this call today is not what I did on some football field, it's what I did in life. I'm a player now. Invest in myself. Total commitment, imagination, kindred spirits, and invest in yourself. And those are the Tiki Factor principles of life. And if you apply those to your life, you'll win. And you can follow me on Instagram at the Tiki Factor. For booking information, it's tikidavis.com. Facebook is Tiki Davis. And Twitter is at Tiki Davis. But hey, that's pretty much it.
Man, Tiki. Golly, man, thank you so much again for taking the time to hang out with the Success Chronicles, man. I truly appreciate it, and I wish you continued success. Yeah.
Yeah, man, my brother, man. Yeah, I'm here. We locked in, and thank you for having me on your platform, man. And hey, man, I love the work that you're doing. I saw you with ET this weekend. Similar situation many years ago, but you know, hey, it's room for all of us, man. So I support you in what you do. Love what them guys are doing. But the thing about it is, all I say is me too.
Yes, sir. Yes, sir. Well, again, thank you so much. And thank you guys for checking out this episode. We'll see you next time. God bless.
Thanks.
Go get it.